Good morning, everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion on Sunday, September 27th, 2020. Our subject today is reality, and we are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent, Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America. And thank you all for joining us. And we'll start today with the morning prayer.
I'm reading from page 264 of the Blue Book. There is but one power in the universe, and that is God. Good is omnipotent. Current evils are not entities or things of themselves. They are simply an apparent absence of good, just as darkness is an apparent absence of light. But God, our good, is omnipresent. Therefore, the apparent absence of good, evil, is unreal. It is only an appearance of evil. There is no reality, life, nor intelligence in matter, for the things which are seen are temporal, but the things which are not seen are eternal.
Beautiful. Thank you very much. Perfect for our subject. All right, watching point.
Okay, watch number 14. Watch lest, in your work in Christian Science, you lose sight of the fact that you are endeavoring not to eliminate a monstrous reality that has the power to maintain itself in spite of the omnipotence of God, but merely to expose the deception and illusion of the belief that God can be absent.
Thank you. Goes perfectly with what Florence read by Mary Baker Eddy. All right, comments on the watching point today?
Well, certainly.
Go ahead.
Certainly helps with the watching, not feeling like there's some, you know, crazy evil power out there that has to be, you know, undone or whatever, but just exposed.
Thank you. That's a total purpose of a watch, to prove the unreality of whatever the problem claims to be. All right, Karen.
Well, pretty much going to say that that's what's changed so much since coming to Plainfield in my understanding and my work, is that I'm never trying to get rid of something. It's to see the allness of God, which is automatically see. There's nothing there but God, and so it's the suggestion that God is not all, and that's all it is. It's not. We're not fighting a thing, and that's what's changed so much for me.
Thank you. That is wonderful. You really begin to progress when you understand that fundamental point of science.
Yeah.
I think one of the, I'm not remembering exactly who, but you said, if we don't have that as our premise, what are we proving? It makes sense.
Yes.
Right, and Jesus said, if you have faith as a grain of mustard seed, mm-hmm. Well, in order to have faith as a grain of mustard seed, you have to start acknowledging the allness of God, the allness of good, and then you can have confidence that when you're denying the claim of evil, whether it's health or, you know, whatever form it seems to come to you at, you'll have confidence in your denial of it. You'll know that it's illegitimate. You won't hope that it's illegitimate. You'll know it.
And that makes all the difference.
And that is the difference between Christian Science and faith cure, or New Age, or whatever you want to call the phony stuff.
Anything else?
Anything else? Someone else going to speak? All right. Okay, well, that was a great watching point and a great, yes, premise for this subject on reality. And I know, what is it you like to say, Florence? What's your reality? What's your reality?
One night I had all this, you know, it was a message of just everything bad, this and this. And I was like, oh my goodness, again. And then I just reached out to God, and all I could hear is, what is your reality? And really that just did it for me. I was so grateful, so, so grateful for that question.
And so often it is just one simple statement of truth. It breaks the mesmerism. It shows if you're always wanting more and more and more to read, more to study, more. Well, just take one thing you have and work with it and prove it. And as Gary said, know it, not just hope it's true. Know it is true. And this is where you have to have, well, some faith and certainly huge amount of faith in God, but also in Mrs. Eddy, in her statements. You can't be wondering about whether what she's saying is true or not. And you prove it for yourself. Don't take anyone's word. Prove it for yourself. That's what's so great about it. Just like in math, you do your own problems, not yourself. All right, so Lillian, you have a golden tip.
In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. All things were made by him, and without him was not anything made that was made.
Thank you. And Linda, you spoke to this, even though it was from the Science and Health, but go ahead. And I spoke to it on the forum, which is on our website.
Well, I was just going back to what we were taught in the last roundtable because of the interconnectedness and the importance of the grateful heart. That really struck me, how to make sure you're really grateful to God. And that's that one statement that was said is, if you're not grateful to God, you really don't know God. And that makes sense to me now. When I first came, I didn't understand God, but the more I get to know God here, that meant a lot to me. And I just realized that you're choosing good as a reality if you're choosing to be grateful and joyous. And the grateful heart is choosing good.
Yeah, because it's actually the last statement in the lesson where it says, the Bible declares, and then that quote from John, this is the eternal verity of divine science. If sin, sickness, and death were understood as nothingness, they would disappear as vapor melts before the sun. So evil would vanish before the reality of good. One must hide the other. So then, how important then to choose good as the reality? So when you get up in the morning, think of that. It's what Joanne wrote about too. Today I choose good.
Yeah, let's all follow Florence's recommendation. Choose the correct reality.
Choose the reality. Choose what's true. And when it seems to be untrue, which we are seeing, yes, our lovely televisions and other forms of era that like to just rub it in your face constantly. Well, turn it off, shut it down, and get into that secret place knowing only the real is true, and that's it. Don't have to believe those lies and dispel it. Do your watch to dispel it. If it becomes strong in your thought, well, you've done much to heal the situation. You know, we've had on our website a few things on the carousel. One was, are we sure that good is going to triumph? Well, and he writes there that is it possible for one individual to have any influence in saving the world? Are we just helpless and hopeless in these days of confusion, or is there truth in the saying that every little bit helps? No good act is performed in vain.
And this is by William McKinsey 100 years ago.
Yes, 100 years ago. They said the same thing. What a mess everything is. So, and then at the end, he says, it is important to avoid errors which will disrupt life for ourselves or others. Anger, for instance, lessens a man's value. Carping and criticism diminish the one who is finding fault. We should have warm hearts, glowing kindness, ability to refresh and renew others. And by being good to mankind, we increase our own health and gladness. The needs of people are identical. They are all seeking peace of mind, rest from anxious cares, and should have that joy of heart that goodwill produces. And then Isaiah says, the work of righteousness shall be peace, and the effect of righteousness, quietness, and assurance forever. So never doubt your ability as you get up in the morning and you're choosing good as your reality to make good that reality for yourself and for others by being that light. Parthen spoke about it in his forum, about the light, and that you follow the light, and it's a gradual thing that you do, but we do it gladly and joyfully to be that. This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. And then in Mrs. Eddy's article, Christian Science Treatment, every pure thought falling silently and gently into human consciousness does its part in cleansing the whole world, just as every falling snowflake does its silent share in transforming the noisesome of the grimy earth into a soft white blanket of purity. We must remember that the smallest truth is mightier than the greatest lie the world has ever known. This is reality. The one is enduring as eternity. The other is transient as a shadow. Take from a lie its power to deceive, and it becomes nothing. It's so beautiful. And we must remember that in going out, spending our days doing good and choosing good as our reality.
And when we become Christian Scientists, we enlist in an army, which means we have to do this aggressively. We can't just be passive, nice, little white, you know, churchgoers.
Yeah.
We have to be aggressive in doing this. And why? Well, because the enemy appears to be aggressive.
That's why it's called aggressive mental suggestion, malicious animal magnetism. There's a reason for that, as Lillian likes to say.
Doesn't come to play.
Oh. Pardon me?
It does not come to play.
It does not come to play. No. It is not your friend. You do not have a tea party with it. It will eat you alive if you will let it.
In Watching Point, I think it's 496, he says we must be aggressors, not mere defenders of the faith. And that's the same one where he talks about being a terror to error. So.
Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you very much.
So when we declare our reality, when we insist that only good is real, we should not get discouraged when not everything in our life appears to be hunky-dory and all peaches and cream right away. We will continue to have things to face. But they come to us to be real. They come to us as false suggestions that are held by mankind. And if they come to you, they come to you to be healed. So put on your armor and don't give up. Don't get tired. Don't get discouraged. Because the battle is the Lord's. It's not personal. And if we keep it out of person, we will have all the strength we need to defeat this enemy.
Thank you. And in Parthen's forum comment, he said, to illumine the earth, the sun does not turn itself on like a spotlight, nor does it attain its high noon position in a sudden leap from below the horizon. but appears gradually by degrees as day progresses. Arising and shining is not a sudden sunburst, but a step-by-step ascension up Jacob's ladder of light, each step brighter than the last. The spiritually minded meet on the stairs which lead up to spiritual love. That's Mary Baker Eddy. Not on horizontal ground, but a stairway. Thus, I have to keep moving, walking in the light as he is in the light, onward and upward.
And the sunlight might appear to us gradually.
Yeah.
But what about the source? Does it ever stop? Does it ever slow down? No. Does God ever stop or slow down? No. Does the almightiness of good ever stop or slow down? No. It might be from view for a while.
Wouldn't be omnipresent.
Exactly.
And you know, it's so lovely. Isn't the daybreak just beautiful? Can't you sometimes, I mean, usually when the sun is just nearing daybreak, it wakes me up, and how your whole room will suddenly just be full of that light. It's so beautiful. Such a lovely time of day. And it's a wonderful time to spend quietly with the Father while things are quiet. You can. So, and also to go back to what Linda was talking about in her forum comment about the joy, you know, that article, Wonderful Things Are Happening. She has a whole section, Dorothy Ricky, yes, has a whole section on the importance of joy. And she says this, so good. Way back in the days of Solomon, Solomon himself recognized that man's health was influenced by his thinking. Solomon pleaded the case against unhappiness and for joy when he said, "A merry heart doeth like a medicine, but a broken spirit drieth the bones." Did you ever hear of a supremely happy individual manifesting heart trouble, skin disease, arthritis, rheumatism, digestive difficulties, tuberculosis, or cancer? No, none of these claims can be manifested when supreme happiness on the basis of God's allness is being consistently manifested. In fact, no matter what the physical claim may be, one of the most important steps in annihilating the error is to help the patient find his true happiness. Joy and gladness heal. Remember that Jesus asked the palsied man to rejoice before he healed him.
Yeah.
Florence, did you?
No, it's so true. I mean, just beautifully put, I feel.
It is. And how true. And that's why in working with patients, you know, you can hear it in their voices sometimes. They're just, there's no joy. And they've got to cultivate that joy. And that would rule out whatever the problem is. But it says here, consistency is of great importance. You can't put on a happy face when you're talking to the practitioner and then go being miserable or yelling at your children or wife or complaining about all things, and I don't know what else goes on, but you can't do that and expect healing. You've got to be consistent.
And why is that? Mrs. Eddy says we have to have a change of base. And what is healing? Is healing actually changing something that's real?
Revealing what already is.
And of heal.
No, healing is the recognition of what God created.
Present perfection.
And is it possible to recognize that without having gratitude for it?
No.
No. That's why Mrs. Eddy says ingratitude is the unpardonable sin. And why is it unpardonable? Well, because if you're continuing to be ungrateful, you're not recognizing God for who and what he is and who and what he created. And you can't
be him. You are denying him. I like to use those words that wake me up.
Yes.
Thank you. Very good.
It's not just some little innocent thing that you have no control over. You're denying him. You're disobeying him. Because how many times are we told to rejoice? That's why those pages that Florence talked about and Eustace talked about in his article, Gratitude, about praising God are so important. It absolutely has to happen. And if you think you're doing it and you get no results, then dig deeper. Maybe you're not really doing it. Just keep at it.
And I think it's in finance, he mentions about thanksgiving and recognition.
Yes.
So I think of that a lot. You know, I even try to go back over my life even before I came here and see where God actually was with me, and I just wasn't paying attention at the time. So.
Thank you very much. That's it. And that article of Bignell Young, I think Karen mentioned it recently. It's a wonderful article, if I say I want. If you say you want right away, you're saying you don't have and you're denying God's presence. You must be affirmative. Choose the good. Let that be your reality and stay with it. Not in a poppycock way, but in a deep, sincere way with understanding of this truth.
And even if you can't think of anything to be grateful for right away, you can say, well, thank you, God, for life. Thank you that I'm alive. Thank you for the privilege of being your image and likeness. Start there. Thank you for truth. The truth has power. That I can rely on truth to win. And just go through the qualities, the characteristics, the synonyms for God. Mm-hmm. And pretty soon you'll find that whatever was bothering you is going to stop bothering you.
I think also that's why Mrs. Eddy's treatment for every day, the way it starts, is so beautiful. She said, declare times without number, I am perfect in God. And where she says, I am joyful, triumphant, and complete. So all this, it uplifts thought when you see early in the morning.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you.
We're so blessed to have all these wonderful things to read and study and start our day with by Mary Baker Eddy and the early workers. Also in Joanne's forum, and maybe we can use this as a watch, where she defines election, because she's saying today, I choose good. Election, divine choice, voluntary preference, free will, liberty to act or not, discernment, discrimination, distinction. This lesson on reality is all about electing to choose good as our thinking. This is what we have been elected or chosen by God to do. And this is the only true election going on. That's a nice treatment.
Yeah.
No one can interfere with that election. No one can interfere. It's impossible to interfere with that election. It's held high above the clamoring senses. So we keep knowing this, because right now there's a lot of talk about a lot of things. All of which is mortal mind.
And in 100 years, they'll look back and say, see, they were facing it too.
That's right. Hope by then all things are good. Like 100 years upon 100 years is still the same thing.
Takes different forms, different names.
Yes.
But it's the same battle, isn't it? It's the battle of truth against the false claim, the false beliefs. And the whole purpose of uplifting our thought, of having joy in our thought, the whole purpose is to enable us to better see what is real. That's the whole purpose.
Yeah.
And that is what constitutes spiritual growth. It is what constitutes healing. Getting closer to God. And what did Jesus say life eternal was? He said it is to know you, the true God. That's life eternal. So it's all saying the same thing. Our thought has to be clear, grateful for what we know God to be, and keep it there.
And undisturbed amid the jarring testimony of the material senses, as Mrs. Eddy says. And yes, there is a definite reason why Gilbert Carpenter had, what is the first watching point about? Enjoy. Joy.
If you don't have your joy, then you're not Christian Science.
Yep. You're swimming under the ice. You've got to come up and get your joy. Don't even try to do anything until you've got that God-given joy.
I loved also that they said that we should be contented no matter what situation we're in and use the one talent. And that just was reaffirming to really think about that and what that means.
Yes. Yes, and our responsive reading this week, Psalm 27, which is one of my very favorites. I'm sure it's many. And, you know, even just to start your morning, and I do, because there's a song we sing here. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the strength of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? So there.
And Craig sings it.
And Craig sings it. Craig sings it. Yes, he does in our singing group. So, yeah, start your day knowing that. Because this is the whole big bugaboo, is that you're afraid that there is some other reality besides God. And there isn't. He's your light. He's your salvation. He's the strength of your life.
And he said, I will hide you in my pavilion. So what are you afraid of?
Yes. And no war should rise against me. In this will I be confident. No doubt. No trembling or doubt. And then that beautiful part we've talked about the one thing to desire. Only one thing. Don't get all confused of all these things you've got to do or desire. Just this one thing. And then actually it's more than one thing, but I will seek after. I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life. You stay in that secret place of the Most High. You behold the beauty of the Lord. That is, I choose reality to see. I see all things beautiful in my experience. I see what's true and not all this other stuff. It's true about man, what's true about our earth, what is the truth. We hold to that. There's not duality. There's just one. And then that I may inquire in his temple, which is constantly always learning more and more about him. An endless, wonderful, endless pursuit. So
you just choose, my God is all, and just stay there. And that truth will bring you the added things.
Yes. It will be added unto you. So it's a wonderful psalm to face each day with and to have that confidence in it and in him. And then in Genesis 1, which we have often, but you know, you really need to think about this. I've been reading, it's called Footsteps of Israel. It's by Samuel Greenwood, who was a wonderful early worker in Christian Science. He's written some beautiful articles. And I didn't realize he'd written this book. I saw it in another book that actually Carrie had recommended to me. I think I mentioned that one too, The Businessman of Syria. Anyway, in this book, he says, because just think about, let us make man in our image, after our likeness. God created you in his own image. So created he the image of male and female he created. And Samuel Greenwood says, continuing our reading of the opening chapter of Genesis 1, we come to the most important statement concerning man, which human language records, namely, that he was created, you were created in the image of God. Nothing greater could be said of man, and nothing less would be consistent with his divine source. To lift humanity to the realization that this divine relationship is the plain purpose of the atonement and the end of biblical prophecy and revelation, this inspired utterance unites man to God beyond the possibility of separation. That what we call creation is simply the manifestation of the Creator's own being and nature. The simple record of the 6 days of divine unfoldment with which the Bible opens present the ideal universe, the new earth and heaven, the new man, towards the perception of which human sense has been slowly moving. This first record has stood and must so stand to the end, for that perfection of things which is to appear when time has run its full course, when the realities of being shall no longer be seen in a glass darkly, but face to face. Thus, one may see, as in prophetic vision, the coincidence of the first and last chapters of the Bible, not as bringing in a new or unknown state, but as the awakening to the reality of things as they have always been. So you just take one statement. Think how deep that is. You are the image and likeness of God. I mean, it's almost overwhelming. And that's why what you know of God is so important. What is your reality of God? And then, so then I go to Mrs. Eddy's definition in the glossary. And that, you know, all knowing, all seeing, all acting, all wise, all loving, eternal. What are you lacking? What are you lacking? Connect yourself as the image and likeness of God. You're all knowing. If he's all knowing, you are all knowing. What is it you think you don't know? What frustrates you? All seeing. You think you can't see? You don't understand? He's all seeing. You are all seeing. You can see as he sees. All acting. That's a big one. All this, my big toe hurts, my left shoulder hurts, my stomach isn't right. I've been, you know, crippled for years. You're the image of him who created you. All action is in him.
All. If it seems otherwise, who's telling you that?
What is your reality? And you can demand this. Because this is the truth of your being. You are the image and likeness of God. All wise. That's so important. The wisdom from above. So that you make the correct decision. So that you can see what's going on. And discern properly. And all loving. You think you don't love, or you're really mad at your spouse or your next door neighbor or the government or the president or whoever else you're so darn mad at. Well, all loving and eternal forever. And in that image too. So you look at yourself in the mirror and you think this is wrong and that's wrong and you're so ugly or whatever else you think. Well, you're talking about the image and likeness of God, so you better stop it. You better realize as you express his qualities, you will be as beautiful
as God is.
As God is.
Awaken his likeness and be satisfied.
Yes. Yes. I love it. I wrote that down. I shall be satisfied when I awake in thy likeness. So you can't be getting old. You can't be all of these things. You are the image and likeness of your heavenly Father right now, and you need to declare it and know it. And that will chase away all the other things that you might think you are because you've been taught false thought that. So don't claim anything of yourself that's not of God. I mean, Lillian will sometimes simply say that. Well, God doesn't have it, so how can I have it? Right?
Yeah.
God's not sick, so how can I be sick? It's such a profound statement, and what Samuel Greenwood said about it, what greater statement could there be? What greater blessing could you have bestowed on you? And the depth of it is infinite because we only scratch the surface in what we know of God. So don't ever think of yourself as ugly, as crippled, as a certain something or other, or as stupid, or whatever else error has ever laid on you.
Or as a victim to anything or anyone.
Yeah, Garrett.
Back to Mrs. Eddy who's saying those are the ghostly beliefs. I just realized that.
Thank you. Yes. And we're going to get into that too, because that was Betty did a good forum on that. Yes. And there's one other thing in this thing, this Genesis 1 and this. And God said, behold, I have given you every herb bearing seed, which is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree in which is the fruit of a tree yielding seed, to you it shall be for meat. And to every beast of the earth, and to every fowl of the air, and to everything that creepeth upon the earth wherein there is life, I have given every green herb for meat. And it was so. And then, of course, behold, it was all very good. Now, we've talked about this before, and I have read this many times, and I never saw that. This does not say you're supposed to be chopping up pigs and eating pigs, does it? It does not say that. It's not in the first creation number one. Now, I will say, I am not vegan, I'm not even a vegetarian, but I'm progressing toward it for many reasons. And Ingrid has spoke eloquently about it. And I found the article, and Mike had found it too and sent it to me in an old journal, February 2nd, 1884. And I'll have Jeremy put it up. It's by, it doesn't give his name, but it's called What We Eat. And it makes a strong claim about not eating flesh. And part of it, he says, the God of life gives us his children as the God of life gives us, his children, an abundance of all that is necessary in cereals, fruits, and vegetables to sustain life, blossoming on the breast of dear Mother Nature, first a blade, then a flower, then a rich fruitage, to abundantly satisfy the most exacting appetite. Think of these things. Taking a life with a view to sustain your own is wrong in principle, selfish in practice, and devoid of the apology of necessity. He does not miss words. Oh my, the whole article is like that. And it was published when Mrs. Eddy was alive, therefore she approved it. So again, it's something to think about. You know, I have been studying about slavery and everything in our country, and all the founding fathers knew it was wrong, even those that practiced it. Robert E. Lee knew it was wrong. Why didn't they do it? Why didn't they stop it? Why didn't everybody stop it? Well, you know, they have their excuses. We always have our excuses for prolonging things.
That should not be prolonged.
Yeah, that should not be prolonged. And so how do we change? The change comes individually within ourselves. And we do not, you are free, independent here in this church to do and think as you will, to vote for who you want to eat what you want, whatever. Sometimes we just suggest things to you, let you think a little more deeply. As you know, I have a daughter-in-law who is an animal rights activist, and she's introduced me to so many things that I never ever thought about. And I can't deny what she says is not true. It is true. I know it to be true. And as we said, all of this, the stepping forward, as Parthen said, stepping forward to the light, a little more light every day to make the progress.
but it's spiritual progress. And
yes,
that's the thing. It's for everyone to progress spiritually. And we have the ideal creation laid out in the first Genesis for us.
And that is the ideal.
Could I just quickly say something? That article, What We Eat, Mrs. Eddy was literally the editor at that time. And then on the issue of slavery, I've actually done some research in the Bible on that. And in Leviticus, it outlines it, and it was, they actually called them bond servants at the time. And they were indentured, or whatever one calls it, for 7 years, and then they were let go. That was to, like, pay a debt, but it was actually more of a work-study program, because when that person left, the landowner or whoever had them as their servants actually provided them with money or animals or whatever so that they had a way to get started on their own. That was a whole system of actually training people to be able to understand God and make it on their own.
Thank you. Yes, and Gary and I were talking about this, that in everything, in all races, it's when they learn of Christianity that their spirituality, their growth grows and continues. Otherwise, everybody in the Adam dream, everyone was monsters, whatever color, whatever role, everybody was, because that's how the Adam dream is. It's only when the light of the Christ truth shone that people progressed out of that. And yes, it's spirituality. But the spirituality results in making the laws of the land that forbid slavery, forbid other things that are cruel and wrong. It will result in progress for the whole human race, and there can be no justification of it. What has always continued it? What is it? Money, because, you know, the societies were dependent on slaves. The societies, the farmers, they're dependent on their slaughtering of animals. And so it seems slow sort of a thing. But we progress, and we as individuals, as I started out, choose our reality, make what's true right for us, and that blesses the whole world, the snowflake that makes the whole blanket white. Now, Betty spoke well about ghostly, what Craig
ghostly
mentioned.
Beliefs.
Yes. So, Betty, are you there?
Yes, I am.
You are.
Summarize
what some of the things you said.
I'll do my best. I thought it was interesting that she had mentioned ghosts several times, and that they talked about the children. You know, it's a fairly familiar quote about that. They should be assured their fears are groundless, that they're not realities. And I thought this was interesting, that their traditional beliefs are erroneous and man-made. And then she went on to define ghosts as illusion, a belief that mind is outlined and limited, that spirit is finite. In other words, an unreal false belief that is the opposite of God as all-powerful, infinite spirit and mind. And I don't want to believe in that. And then talked about how the age has not wholly outlived, Mrs. Eddy talked about not wholly outliving, the sense of ghostly beliefs, and still holds them more or less, and continues on. And we need to not admit the somethingness of superstition and yield up all belief in it and be wise. And when we learn that error is not real, we shall be ready for progress. And I looked up superstition, and this was kind of blew me away. Excessive exactness or rigor, religious opinions or practice, doing things not required by God, or abstaining from things not forbidden, or the belief in what is absurd or without evidence, and the belief in the direct agency of some power or in omens or prognostics. Anyway, I thought about that was really obsessive and compulsively doing wrong things at the wrong time, trying to appease God, or even worse, appease some other power we think is bigger than God. And I thought about things that haunt me, past mistakes, guilt, sense of loss, a nagging fear. You know how those are. You don't quite want to talk about them. And then identifying myself as a subject to superstitious beliefs like heredity or materia medica, doing things the same way or afraid to do something new. I know sometimes that cell phone really gets me. and then all that black cats and ladders and stuff. But then she went on about commanding the situation when you understand it's self-deception and that it's about sweeping away the gossamer web of mortal illusion. And gossamer was a fine, filmy substance, and that just made me feel like, wow, that illusion is not very deep. It's just enough to make you believe in it. And, you know, and then it's only my false beliefs, which when I confront them, and sometimes I have to do it really vigorously and persistently with truth, and for a while, and then I finally see their falsity, and then they're gone. And it's like, isn't it funny how when I finally wake up from some false belief and see it's nothingness, it truly disappears.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I was talking to practitioners, and that's because it was never true in the first place, so I added that in there, because it's so true.
Yeah.
It just really hit me.
Wonderful. Yeah, it's great. And this is how, the lesson says, Ecclesiastes, lo, this only I have found, that God hath made man upright, but they have sought out many inventions. And
ghostly beliefs out there.
Many, yeah. And we get taught, and this is how we start to believe in an unreality, an unreal, something that's unreal. But you're taught it. And I know, people still knock on wood. Right, if they see that black cat or whatever, well, all this other things we're taught about sin, disease, and death, they're just as superstitious. They're not true. We've just been taught to think they are true. That's why I love, what does it say? Well, to talk about, it's a nameless nothing. It is a nameless nothing because it's not true. God didn't say it. It's not anything God made, this pandemic business. You keep it. The nameless nothing. Don't believe it. It's an unreality that people are believing. And because they believe it, and they believe it so strongly, it seems to happen. Because people say, well, it's really happening, so what are you talking about? Well, you believe something enough, it will seem to manifest itself in belief, in the Adam dream, not in reality. So you don't have to go there, and don't. And that's true of any of these aggressive mental suggestions. So thank you, Betty. That was good. And, that business about superstition and what did you say about it? It was compulsive. Because isn't there? There's
that OCD thing they used to say, obsessive and compulsively doing the wrong thing at the wrong time to appease God or some other power.
I know I had kids in my classroom and they would have this so-called disorder. And dear little souls, they would do things in a ritualistic thing, like even at their desks. And I would, just patiently loving them and helping them to see that they didn't have to keep their pencil in a certain order. And they were,
Yes. Yes, well, this speaks to it, the belief in superstitions, that if they have to do these things to ward off the evil spirits. Yeah. Wow. And I hear it quoted, they'll say about themselves, I'm a, whatever it's called, compulsive. That's why I'm always cleaning my house every 5 hours or whatever it is.
Hours every 5 minutes.
Hours every 5 minutes.
Yes, man, it's not wash hands. I mean, it's not, I'm not laughing, really. It's a very serious something that it's sad to see. and to think that it's all the shadow is something.
Thank you very much. No, it is, and that's exactly right. And today, with all this compulsive washing hands, that's not helping them
either. No, it is not.
So, but we'll know that that's not of God, it's superstition.
I see why joy is important, because error is so, it can't wear you down when you're joyous, and you can just keep your grandeur and just be the God made man if you're joyous, instead of falling in down to, well, I'm going to give in to this and accept this other thing.
Thank you. Yeah. Very true.
Never give in to it.
Choose the reality. Exactly. And that, Annie gave a beautiful testimony about the washing of the hands. It symbolized innocence or something, right? It was very lovely several weeks ago. That's the truth. There's always the truth about everything, the truth about the lie, and that will stay with. Now, Gary's going to finish. This is a very beautiful testimony that Carrie sent to me a little while ago. I've always planned to read it, but we just haven't yet. So I'll read it today about the healing of a little blind girl.
And it's written by Joyce Ann Pettit, a reminiscence, and it appears in a book called In My True Light and Life, Mary Baker Eddy Collections. And Carrie found it. We hadn't seen it. So anyway, it's...
We'll put it on our website.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's a letter written by her. It starts, "Dear friends, a few evenings ago, I was recalling to a friend and member of the Mother Church a precious incident I had had in 1966 in meeting a woman, 94 years old, who had been healed by our leader, Mary Baker Eddy, when she was a small child and had been blind from birth. My friend thought you might like to have this in your files. Perhaps you already do. I do not know, but I will relate it as best I can. In 1966, I was working on Saturdays as assistant arts and crafts teacher for the Boston Division of the Salvation Army near Copley Square. One day, a lovely, slim, and gently dignified older lady came to our class to show others some of her exquisite embroidery, which she did, and to help others to learn. I perhaps may comment here that when I first met her, I really was impressed by a special refinement and nobility of her bearing and attitude, and a deep gentleness about her, as if one time she had been touched by a holy experience. That afternoon, as I recall, I was doing some typing in a nearby office, and she came in to borrow a pen, I think it was. We got to talking a bit, and then she asked me if I were a Salvation Army lass, and I replied, no. I was a student of Christian Science. She was quiet and then asked me if sometime I would like to hear about her own encounter with Mrs. Eddy. I immediately replied with much eagerness that I would. And she said that she would come back when I'd finished my work to tell me about it. And also she said she didn't often relate it to others because she had known it was something to be cherished and lived and not talked about. So she related best, as I can remember, this way. She had been born of a Negro father and Indian mother, and they lived in the poor section of Boston. Evidently, to earn money, the mother used her talent for needlework and dressmaking, and each day she would take her little blind daughter to the nearby Baptist church, where several other seamstresses did sewing for wealthier ladies. One day, Mrs. Eddy came to their church, perhaps bringing some sewing or talking with them about Christian Science. But she spied the little blind black girl sitting in the corner where her mother would put her until the day's work was done. Mrs. Bowles said that Mrs. Eddy came and sat beside her and gently talked with her, and then asked her if she knew the two prayers God had given to all of us. And she repeated with Mrs. Bowles the Lord's Prayer and David's 23rd Psalm. She asked her to learn them and love them. The next day, Mrs. Eddy came back and again sat with the little girl and had her repeat to her the two prayers. Mrs. Bowles says she just felt enveloped in God's great love. To a degree, this sense of his ever-present love has never left her. as she and her mother walked home that evening, she began to see for the first time in her life. She never saw Mrs. Eddy again, but she later discovered who she was. And when she learned to read, she became a devoted student of the Bible and Mrs. Eddy's science and health. She also became an excellent seamstress, and at 94 years, when I met her, was still doing exquisite work. She told me, too, that when one of her sons had had tuberculosis in his 30s, she had healed him through Christian Science prayer.
I don't know if there's anything more beautiful. So, thank you all, and remember to choose good is the reality. Thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.